to the AEW Full Gear After Party here on Sunday night's main event. It is Saturday night. We have just finished watching the pay-per-view, and we are here to discuss all things AEW Full Gear. We're your hosts. I'm Boris, and joining me tonight is Matthew Grant. Matt, how are things going, my friend?
So what you're trying to tell me is, like, Saturday night is all right for fighting. That's what you're trying to say.
Saturday night is all right for fighting. I will accept it this week especially.
Yeah, so normally Saturdays are my days to do my thing with my wife, Erin. If you haven't listened to Collision Catch-Up, please do. Appreciate you. But yeah, here we are. A rare Saturday off for me. But I'm here anyways. SME sliding on in here. And I'm pumped to talk some Full Gear, man.
I am too. A very mixed reaction overall. And, you know, it'll be interesting as we get through the card because it was an up and down card. And Matt, let's just get right into things. And remember, thank you so much if you are watching on Facebook, X, or YouTube. Welcome. It's awesome. And just remember, you can also listen on podcast form over at snmeradio.com. Go to your favorite podcast catcher and search for Sunday Night's Main Event. Hit that subscribe. Leave a review. It helps us in every single way humanly possible. And I just want to thank everyone who does listen to these shows. It honestly means the most. Even if we have one person listening, that's enough for me. But it's hopefully, times a few thousand. Having said that, so Matt, this card was one of those shows, in my opinion, where you expected a lot to happen story-wise. And a lot of story did happen, and we'll get to all that shortly. But I kind of feel like, it's one of those curses where the wrestling fan's brain starts kind of compiling a lot of stuff. And I know as a fact that some people were messaging me saying, oh, I'm not liking this show. It's too overbooked. This is crazy stuff, blah, blah, blah. Who's the devil? So it's one of those cases of where you build it up in your head too much, and then you're not happy because of what we got on TV.
Yeah, it's I'm not entirely sure how I feel about the show either. The one thing I think that stands out in everybody's mind, no matter what, over anything, and I'm jumping right into it, but here it is.
Yeah.
Hangman, Swerve, match Woo! Not only of the night, but goddamn, it's got to be up there for match of the year candidate. That was Dude. One of the most gruesome and, like, wow, violent matches yeah. I've ever seen.
Agreed 100%. That match made me squirm. Made me, literally, I was watching that match standing up, just squirming at almost every other move. And it was one of those cases where, you know, did it cross the line? I don't know, but I really did like it. And I do know that some people, again, as the show was going on, were messaging me and they're like, oh, this is too much. And I get that. I understand, right? But that's the beauty of AEW in general, right? Is that there's a little something for everyone. Having said that, you know, and you bring up a great point, match of the year contender, everyone's got to start thinking about that because the vote is going to be starting. I'm going to be announcing something. The main show after Survivor Series, so that's 1 week tomorrow, I'm going to be talking about the year end and how that's going to work this year. So remember that match. But yeah, man, that match was absolutely crazy. I loved it. And I felt sorry for anyone who went on after them, but I think they picked the perfect match to go on after them. And I'm so glad that it wasn't a women's match.
Yeah, the way this card was structured tonight was really interesting. I noticed as well. Even the little things like putting when MJF's defending the Ring of Honor Tag Team Championships, putting that on the pre-show and then putting his World Championship defense as the main event. It's those small little things that, like, you wouldn't normally think about, especially with somebody having two championships. It doesn't happen too often, but AEW does stuff like that pretty well, and I will give them credit for that.
Exactly. I think the match placement was really well done overall. But let's just jump right to it, Matt. Thumbs up, thumbs down, thumbs in the middle. How would you rate this pay-per-view overall?
I'm going to say thumbs in the middle. My reasoning for thumbs in the middle, I'm going to be honest with you, I was really expecting a payoff to the whole devil stuff that was going on. That was a big, big part of the build of the match with Jay White and MJF. Cole coming back, cool. That was a fun little moment. I expected at least some sort of furtherment to that storyline, and there wasn't at all. And that felt like a little bit of a letdown. Even some questionable decisions, although some very good booking decisions made tonight, in particular title changes, as well as some big matches where particular people won where they should have.
And I feel like some personal stories, some people's stories kind of progress in a very positive light. So I'm going to go with you. I'm going to say thumbs in the middle. And I would say the first third of the show was meh. I was on my phone more. And I've talked about this on the main show. I've talked about this on many podcasts where that's how I gauge my interest in what I'm watching on TV, especially wrestling, is how often am I checking my phone? And for the first third of the card, I was honestly on my phone 90% of the time, right? Watching corner of my eye, peripheral vision type thing. It's the middle. That middle third was incredible. That middle third was absolutely incredible. And I'm adding the Texas Deathmatch, a part of that middle third. And then the last two matches, not everyone's cup of tea. So overall for me, I would have to say a thumbs in the middle. Again, you know, everyone has their say. This is what these after parties are all about. If you're watching live on YouTube, X, or Facebook, just leave a comment. There is a feedback thread also on the Facebook group, facebook.com/snmeradio, and you can leave your say there. And also, if you're a patron, you already have the link. We'll get feedback later on. And if you're not a patron, well, just send a message. You can find me on Facebook. Send me a message. I'll send you the link, and you can get your say here. All right, so Mike Baker, first-time listener, quick question regarding Hangman. How do you think they book him to still look like a legit threat when he lost his match to get revenge on Swerve? Mike, we're going to touch on that later on when we're actually talking about that match, because that match result actually, honestly, surprised me. You know, we did, in all the various previews we've done, I think almost everyone said, you know, Swerve won the first match, Hangman's going to win this much. It's a Texas Death match. It was almost built for Hangman to win, but that's not what happened. So we'll get to that later on.
Yeah, like the Texas Death Match is Hangman's match, Full Gear's Hangman's pay-per-view, essentially. So, like, yeah, it's kind of weird to see what went down. But in my personal opinion, that was part of the direction I was going, where I was saying the right person won. I truly believe the right person won there.
And it gives us something to look forward to, right? That final boss mentality. Hangman is at some point going to have to vanquish him. You know, and the whole buildup is he hasn't beat him yet. So we'll talk about that a little later. Mike Baker, thank you so much for leaving that comment. This is what I mean. The show is all about you. It's all about your opinions. We're just the dorks who talk about it here on camera. All right, Matt. So what do you want to do now? Do you want to jump straight into the results?
Well, let's do it. Yeah, let's go match by match here and kind of just dive through. We had kicking off the pre-show, 0 hour, we had Eddie Kingston and Jay Lethal.
Yeah, this was an interesting match. So here's the thing. I thought ROH Championship, I gotta say, I make fun of ROH every week on BAM. It's just one of those things where it's just dark elevation. There are some good stuff. Eddie Kingston is champ, one of the good stuff that's currently happening at ROH. By the way, Athena, just got to get that daily praise of Athena, because she is just killing it in ROH.
We're going to bring up Athena before we even dive into the pay-per-view. Spoiler alert, I'll give you guys a couple seconds here, because we did on Collision catch-up. I got to get your reaction. Ronda Rousey making her Ring of Honor debut. Your thoughts?
it's so random, so weird, and that's what I love about wrestling in 2023. Ronda Rousey, she was headlining WrestleMania a few years ago, and here she is on a dark match for ROH.
Wild times, man. Wild times. Although, right? If we're getting Athena and Ronda at Final Battle, I'm all in.
Whew. Same here. Good one. Yeah, no, honestly. Battle,
like, sorry? The thing that really kind of irked me about this match being on the, first of all, 0 hour, second of all, being on a AEW pay-per-view, Final Battle is literally a month away.
Yeah, 3 weeks. It's December 9th. The 15th. Yeah, a month away. Dude, here's the thing that irks me about, like, the whole ROH conundrum for me. And it's, I really think that Tony Khan has no idea what to do with Ring of Honor, right? So, you give us Jay Lethal, you know, Mr. Ring of Honor, like, second longest TV champion, held TV title and ROH championship for how long? This is the type of match that could be the main event of Final Battle, which Final Battle is their big pay-per-view for the year, right? So putting this on 0 hour of a random AEW pay-per-view, I shouldn't say random, but of, you know, AEW pay-per-view, kind of felt weird. And then further to that, the whole Continental Tournament thing and that announcement, which we'll get to shortly, it just, I don't know what the plan is for ROH. But this match... Let's talk about this match. This match was fine for what it was. I was really hoping vintage Jay Lethal, but we ended up getting House of Tar Evil Jay Lethal with all of the craziness.
That's exactly what I was going to allude to, is the difference between Ring of Honor Jay Lethal, where he was the world champion, where he was having great matches, where he was, you know, doing his thing, compared to being associated with Jared and Satnam and Sanjay and all the shenanigans. Like, don't get me wrong. We said it already. That's some people's cup of tea. But, like, personally for me, I'm just like, like, there's only so much of that stuff I can handle. And being in a world championship situation, kind of over it. Kingston is an amazing representation of being a world champion. I'm really happy that he has the opportunity to be a world champion, because a few years ago, we were going to lose Eddie Kingston altogether from the pro wrestling world. And now to see him thriving and killing it is an amazing thing. So, yeah. I'm just not a big fan of the, like, again, there's certain times where I'm like, oh, that's funny. Like, it pops me. But it's like, in a situation like this, where it's a situation where it's a world championship match, it's a serious thing, it doesn't make sense for me.
Yeah, and the finish kind of just came out of nowhere. It was very much your stereotypical 0 hour finish, right? We got Kingston essentially just hitting that spinning back fist after a few counters, and that was that.
Very, 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 like, I guess flat is the best way to put it.
Yeah, that's exactly like pretty much how I would explain it. Yeah.
Although I popped after the match for Kingston calling Stokely a bald bitch.
I love the dynamic. And that's honestly, for those of you, which I'm pretty sure I'm like one of the only people who watch ROH that's, you know, around right now. The interactions between Kingston and Stokely Hathaway, everything that Stokely Hathaway is doing right now in Ring of Honor is gold. And that's what I think a lot of people didn't pick up in his commentary, is he doesn't like Eddie Kingston. It's very much a Vince McMahon, Stone Cold type of feud that they're having. In terms of, you have Stokely Hathaway, who is the figurehead. He is running Ring of Honor. And you have Eddie Kingston, who's not his champion. He's not the guy he wants a champion. So, you know, I think a lot of people may have missed on some of those jokes. Especially, it's like, I think at one point someone asked Stokely Hathaway, you know, can't you stop Jeff Jarrett and everyone else from interfering? And then Stokely Hathaway's like, no, I can't. Like, just so cold on that.
Yeah, I know. That's a very, like, solid comparison, because that's exactly kind of the dynamic that they're trying to create. And, like, I think for those who are watching and get it, essentially, what you said there, because you're a viewer of Ring of Honor, you get it. For me, I've seen some of the vignettes, but, like, they didn't do a good job in conveying that story all that much. And it gets really confusing when they intertwine those lines too much.
And that's exactly it, right? That's exactly it. And that's one of the problems, right? I thought the whole point of Ring of Honor getting their own show was so that we don't see this. And it just causes this weird rift in the space-time continuum in the multiverse when you get Ring of Honor in the AEW TV, because it just doesn't make sense. It's kind of shoehorned in.
And then even with the tag team titles with MJF and Adam Cole's whole situation, you know, like, it's a weird situation. Even the Hung Bucks holding the 6-man titles for what, 3 weeks, 4 weeks or something like that? Didn't even get to be on a Ring of Honor TV or pay-per-view. Like, aye.
Yep, exactly. All right, shall we keep going on?
Let's do it. Moving on with one member of the Blackpool Combat Club. I was going to try and go for a faction, but I completely blanked out on how many members there were. Claudio Castagnoli faces off against the House of Black's Buddy Matthews. I was mentioning it on Collision Catch-Up to see Buddy Matthews back into the mix. See him getting singles matches again is awesome. And him and Claudio, like, this was a fun match. Exactly like what it needed to be for this program. It wasn't like blow away, but like they still had a great match. And a solid finish with the sharpshooter Claudio up. Wasn't expecting all that much out of this, to be honest with you. I'm intrigued to see if there's anything going forward with the two and the fact.
Exactly. Like, yeah, this match kind of seemed a little random, but you know, I hold on to that hope that these are just seeds being planted for a future feud between House of Black and House of Black and Blackpool Combat Club. Too many B's there. And honestly, you know what? I always forget how good Buddy Matthews is. He is so talented. He's so underrated. He's so damn good. He is so damn good. And Castagnoli just continues to impress. It's like, that guy is the anti-Samson. The less hair he has, the stronger he is.
That's fucking awesome. Cesaro, Claudio. He is the strength that man possesses is legitimately inhuman. And some of the things he pulls off, I'm just like jaw-dropping, like mind-blowing. There's so many adjectives you can use to describe him because like he just continues to impress, like you said.
Yeah, it's crazy, right? It's crazy, and with age, I feel like he's just gotten stronger and better. And it's the deadlifts that he does, the amount of deadlifts he does in a match. You being a worker, you know, like that's not an easy thing to do whatsoever.
No, man. And that's again why I have so much respect for it, because it's like that's not stuff that's easy to pull off whatsoever. And he just does it with ease too. Like there's no struggle whatsoever, and that's the more impressive part about it.
Exactly. That's exactly it. It's always good. It's always good. All right. Mike Baker said that Meteora into the giant swing was legit insanely impressive. That's exactly what we mean, Mike. Like it is just crazy. Like these how he can just turn moves from nothing almost.
What was it? It was like a wheelbarrow and he ended up like transitioning it into a swing like last week. It was unreal. It was so smooth.
So good. So good. So good.
And we move on to the Ring of Honor Tag Team Championships on the line as MJF found himself a partner on Rampage last night, last minute. As he found himself Samoa Joe, he took Adam Cole up on the offer that he kept bringing up. And Samoa Joe ended up getting himself a world championship match against MJF for teaming up with him, facing off against the Guns. And I don't think a lot of people were expecting the finish that we've seen out of this match.
Yeah, so this was a fine match. It was what it was. The Guns continue to improve. They might be the most improved male wrestlers out there this year.
Gold is the best act in AEW right now. No questions 100%. Asked.
100%. Since they formed at the beginning of Collision, they've been just killing it. But yeah, this was a very weird match. Matt, is this how you would have done it? Like the whole Samoa Joe just kind of MJF accepting Joe and them kind of just announcing this. Would you have done it the way that it went down?
Them butting heads was an interesting dynamic, I will say. Even like they were trading off tags and like preventing each other from doing each other's moves at some points and then finally hitting the moves together. It was a very weird but like unique dynamic. I am intrigued to see if MJF follows up on giving Samoa Joe that championship match or not. Is it like a contractual obligation or is it something that kind of just is on a handshake deal between MJF and Joe and he's just kind of expecting him to give it to him? That's one dynamic of it. But I honestly think the highlight of the match for me isn't even the whole MJF Samoa Joe, isn't even the return of Adam Cole, but it continues to be the improvement of the Guns, man. Austin and Colton continue to just be able to hang with some of the best in the world. They don't look out of place. In fact, they look exactly in place with these guys. And it just shows the improvement these guys have had since being with the company. And just, I never thought when they turned on their dad that they would end up being in the position that they are today. But man, them joining up with Jay White and Juice Robinson was one of the best moves that Tony Khan could have ever honestly done.
100%. I agree with you there. And like, the highlight to me were the guns, honestly. Cole's return was a little weird. It always concerns me seeing someone fresh off of not one, but two surgeries, you know, still in crutches. Again, we don't know how far along he is in recovery, but just the thought of seeing him there always irks me, because you never know. Like, stranger things have happened in terms of people getting injured, right? Look at the freak accident that he had to get injured, right? So that kind of concerned me a little, but it did cause and start the story, which we might as well talk about. Matt, what was the story for the evening?
Yeah, so Cole comes out, distraction on the guns, rear naked choke from Joe, tap out, they retain the championships. We've seen the handshake between Samoa Joe and MJF. That kind of being done, a little bit of a moment between Cole and MJF. The guns jump MJF. So this whole thing is interesting, and I have a few different ways of looking at it. So I'll just explain kind of what happened first and then my dynamic on it. So you had the guns jumping MJF. You had them trapping his leg in a chair and stomping on it, essentially taking him out for the main event, supposedly. My thing with the whole beatdown and everything that went down in this entire segment, and even in the main event, was Cole just kind of stood there. And like, I get it. He's on crutches. I understand. But is there more to that meets the eye to this? Was this kind of just like him playing up the injury? Was it like, there's so many questions that I have watching Cole react the way that he did throughout the entire night to certain things.
And that's exactly it, right? So we have, on one hand, we have Adam Cole, who's still injured, who can't do anything physical. So they told him, just stand back, right? There's a hurricane coming through, just stand back. Then on the other hand, you have, is he the devil? Is this the master plan that he's had, right? And I'm not quite sure which it is. Is it a combination of the two? But honestly, this whole Adam Cole, MJF, Jay White story, the through story throughout the entire evening, including the main event, was the most Attitude Era Raw thing I have ever seen in AEW.
It's so true the way you describe that. Like, now that like I just kind of pieced it together, especially the way they dragged it out throughout the night. Yeah, 100%. Even like, did nobody acknowledge that MJF just casually stole an ambulance to get back to the venue?
That's exactly it. Like, literally, down to him driving himself to back to the arena, stealing an ambulance from a medical facility. Like, it was the most Attitude Raw thing I have ever seen. Just honestly did bring me back to grade school, staying up till midnight, having to watch Raw. Like, it honestly did remind me of that Raw when Stone Cold beat down Bret Hart in the ambulance and everything, just because that was the through story, right? It was interesting. It was funny. Was it too much? Maybe for some people, right? Might be too sports entertainment for some people, right? And I get that. But they're trying stuff. I'll give them that. And I'm still struggling whether I like it or not, right?
I've been saying it on Collision Catch-Up the last couple of weeks. I don't know if I like it being the main focus of the World Championship.
That's exactly it, right? It kind of, with the problem that I have with this story, and this, I think you or Aaron brought this up at some point, was that it's kind of above the heavyweight title at this point. And the heavyweight title is kind of just literally a prop in this entire storyline that's happening with the devil, with Adam Cole, with Roderick Strong. And sometimes it's so over the top that it's like, wow, am I watching AEW or am I watching something else? Again, not a bad thing. It's just so weird to see this all play out. And tonight was like kind of like the epitome of that. Seeing this very Attitude Era-like story go down with MJF getting injured. And just the overacting of even as they're loading MJF into the ambulance. He's like, don't let them do this. Don't let them take the title, right? It's like it was almost, dare I say, too much.
Yeah, it's one of those things like, we're podcasters and maybe we're wrong because hell, look at the reactions it continues to get. Like it's something where if the crowd's feeding into it, then give them what they want. But like, I don't know, man, it's going to get to a point where it's going to get stale. And I almost fear that it's going to hit that point sooner than later. And I wonder if they're going to get to the peak of the story before it does get stale.
Well, that's the problem with us being podcasters, right? It's like, I almost feel like on, especially on the roundtable every Sunday, you know, we kind of stir the pot and we ask that question, is this getting stale? So in my mind, I keep asking myself that, is this getting stale? Is this getting stale? And this is why I love to hear from our listeners, which you can just by adding in the chat, going to the Facebook group, adding your comments, we'll read them out. And yeah, like, you know, I don't know about you, but I try so hard, especially for pay-per-views, right before an after party, to take a step back and watch it as a fan.
I do that. I do my best with that, with pay-per-views especially. I try my best to, you know, remember why I do what I do. And that's because I am a fan of this stuff. So there is certain decisions and certain things that happen on programs that I'm just like, I don't know if that was the right call.
Exactly. Exactly. But again, this could be the dilemma.
Sometimes going,
exactly. And that's sometimes the dilemma of being a wrestling fan, right? Like, it's like you build up your fantasy book. Yeah. And your fantasy book, all these stories. And if it doesn't play out on TV, it sucks, right? So that's the problem. I know we're spending a lot of time on this, but this was the through story throughout the entire show. So I really wanted to touch on that. Remember, you can leave your comments on the chat, on the Facebook group. If you're a patron, just we'll get to you shortly. But yeah, all right, let us jump to the main show.
Yeah, this was a great way to start the show. We had the patriarchy of the TNT champion, Christian Cage, Luchasaurus, Nick Wayne taking on a badass trio of Sting, Darby Allin, and Adam Copeland. First off, the matching jackets of Sting and Adam Copeland, the face paint, like, bravo. This entire bit between the entrances of both the patriarchy and the other trio of Sting, Darby, and Adam Copeland, the choir that Christian got for his entrance, money. Money.
Yep.
His presentation on AEW, man, doing some of the best work of his career.
100% agree with you on that, man. And it was a great way to start the pay-per-view. It makes the pay-per-view feel, you know, that next level. And that's what you want from a pay-per-view. It's above a TV show, you know, and the entertainment factor is going to be there. And, man, this was a great way to just start the pay-per-view. I feel, you know, I was talking to some people and I said, at times throughout the night, this was the most Los Angeles crowd humanly possible. And by that, I mean very tame, very tranquilo. You know, maybe a little too much wacky tabacky with the Southern California people. But I'm from Southern California, FYI. But yeah, this match wasn't that case. But it was kind of like one match they were hot, one match they weren't. One match they were hot, one match they weren't. So that was an interesting dynamic that I saw throughout this throughout the show. And it really, I noticed it like a couple matches down.
Yeah, I noticed that as well. And we also did not mention at the corner of Sting, Darby, and Adam Copeland was the Nature Boy, Ric Flair.
I forgot. Yeah. Like, yeah, he was there.
The most randomness of, like, it's so random.
Like, think of it this way. We have Ric Flair, who made his name in the 70s. Sting, who made his name in the 80s and 90s. Adam Copeland, who made his names in the 2000s and 2010s. And then you have Darby Allin, who's in the 2010s, 2020s. Like, this is the craziest possible mashup smorgasbord of wrestlers humanly possible.
I did pop because there was a picture of, I believe, Ric Flair low blowing Christian from WWE, yeah. And now Christian getting Flair back, and I was just like, okay, that well done. Yep. Christian taking off, leaving Luchasaurus and Nick Wayne to take the finish, and yeah, I'm very intrigued to see the future between Copeland and Christian. I wonder if they are going to end up having that one-on-one match, when it goes down, and are we going to see what... Let's be real. Everybody wants to see, and that's them get back together, have a tag team run, and possibly have a tag team championship run.
Exactly. And I kind of like the fact that they're teasing. They're not really allowing them to interact too much, right? It's that constant tease, that I absolutely love. And the fact that Christian left his kids and the like to take the L, that was really great. That was so well done. Really did enjoy that with this. But yeah.
The only man Sting... that can make a turtleneck look good, Father of the Year.
Yep, exactly. Sting, Darby Allin, Adam Copeland end up winning. Sting gets a standing ovation after Darby Allin tells the crowd this is the last time that he'll be there.
That's crazy, man. We're literally like just under 3 months away from the retirement of Sting. And his run in AEW, man, I'm so happy he got a chance to have this AEW run, because we think of the sour note he went out on, unfortunately, his WWE run. And like, even before that, like, TNA was TNA, don't get me wrong, but like, he was not on a mainstream platform for several years after WCW. And now him having this run and him getting the chance to elevate guys too and work with different talents. Hell, I got a chance to see Sting in Hamilton, Ontario for a Dynamite taping out of all places. You know, it's
right.
This has been a really fun run for Sting, and I'm excited to see him close it out over the next couple of months.
Agreed. That's the takeaway that I had as well. All right, let us move on.
AEW International Championship. We had Orange Cassidy defending his championship against Jon Moxley. I don't know if maybe it was the way this match was built, or... I'm just kind of over this, if I'm being honest with you.
Yep.
I don't think it was a bad match whatsoever. I'm just kind of over this. I really want this kind of to be moved on from, and I hope this was kind of the period, the end point on this, because these guys need to stay away from each other for a little bit, in my personal opinion.
Yeah, we've seen them interact way too much on regular TV, on pay-per-views, right? So I think I agree with you. This was a fine match, exactly what it needed to be. The right person won. Jon Moxley bled. What more can you ask for in the match?
Yeah, that's honestly hit all the bucket notes. I do really enjoy Orange Cassidy as international champion, and I'm excited to see the run continue.
Yep, exactly. All right. Let's
are we allowed to turn keep the screen black and white now?
Or, you know, I love how they use the exact same frame rate as the NWO entrance.
It's so ridiculous, man. Timeless Tony Storm. You want to talk about one of the best acts in AEW right now. I don't want to say overnight, but it almost feels like overnight she became timeless and just, man. AEW is that they're picking up on little things every time they're presenting her on TV. Even like when they were trying to knock on her door, Luther opens the door, they immediately cut the picture to black and white. And her entrance, like the pose in the corner before she hits her finish. Like there's so many things where they're starting to really find their rhythm with this character, and Tony's just playing into it as well. So well.
She is just having fun, and you can tell that she's having fun. You can tell that this is her. You can tell that she's watched these old movies and probably like played this up in the back with, you know, with people and stuff. This is perfect for her. And I never thought I would see Luther in a position in North America where I actually gave a damn.
I couldn't have said it better myself, to be honest with you.
Right?
Super fun role for him. doesn't have to bump, doesn't have to do anything crazy. He's just having fun being a butler. And honestly, man, like this act for me right now is really, really doing it for me. And I think this was the right call. I don't know if Sheeta got too much out of this title reign per se. But with how over Toni Storm is and how well this character is being presented right now, and even the build up to the match where it was like Toni Storm's homecoming to Hollywood. Like, it wasn't even really being presented as a title match. It was more Toni Storm's homecoming than anything. I think this had to be the right way you went with it.
Agreed 100%. Points to Toni Storm. Something very small, a small detail, right, was in the finish. As she was about to do the hip attack, she clearly felt that the butler's tray was falling out of her ass. So I like how she kind of stopped, she posed a little bit, fixed it, does the hip attack to get the win, not allowing that thing to fall, like, you know, mid-hip attack to, like, execute the proper ending. Points to her for that.
Yeah, no, I kind of questioned that at first, and then watching it back, I noticed that as well. And even her covering up by hitting a pose and stuff, like, it's those small little things. Her celebration afterwards, just like sprawling out on the mat and letting the championship drape over. Yeah, I 100% agree, Mike. Toni is my favorite part of the women's division. I need her and Athena to have some sort of interaction. That would be awesome. Mike Baker, 1000% agree with you.
Can you imagine the minions interacting with Timeless Toni Storm? Like that is what I need to see out of this AEW women's division. If you're not going to give them a lot of time, let's make this ridiculous and let's have fun with it.
I think honestly right now, that's one of the, again, most over acts in AEW. So just cash in on it while you can.
In wrestling. I think it's one of the most overacts in wrestling right now, which is crazy to think.
Yep.
Toni Storm, who had one, it just seems like she had one foot out the door of wrestling in general a year and a half ago, right? It's, and seeing her just out there having fun, looking healthy,
I even think
having
about
fun.
Her second run as, sorry, I even think about her second run as the world champion, the AEW Women's World Champion, where she was part of the Outcast, and a lot of people were over it and wanted her to lose the championship. And now we're in a position where people were clamoring for her to win the championship back. So,
yep. Seeing the interaction with Mariah May is cool to see, but I am so curious to see what's her name? The former champ, Jamie Hayter. When Jamie Hayter comes back, how they're all going to interact together.
That's an interesting thought. I hadn't even processed Jamie Hayter and her possibility of returning anytime soon. So good idea in bringing that one up. I'm intrigued.
Yep. All right. So in the back, I wanted to talk about this. Let's talk about this now. Eddie Kingston is in the back with Renee Paquette. Eddie Kingston declares himself as part of the Continental Classic, and he says that he is going to be defending the New Japan Strong and ROH champion in every match. That means that the champion will be a Triple Crown champion with the Continental Championship, with the Strong Openweight Championship, and the Ring of Honor Championship. Matt, this is very confusing because this tournament ends at the next pay-per-view, December 30th. There's a ROH pay-per-view right in the middle, literally in 2 weeks, right in the middle in 4 weeks of this, right? Like, it's just, again, what's going on with ROH? It's very confusing. Is this the right move? What do you think?
The continuity is, it's a weird one, to be honest with you. And then, I didn't even process Eddie being in the tournament and Final Battle being in the middle of this entire tournament, him saying he's going to defend the championships. Like, you essentially just null and voided your Final Battle main event, or essentially you're null and voiding what Eddie's saying that he's going to defend. Like, it's so frustrating, the crossover sometimes, because it creates this conflict of where you want to take things seriously. It's Continental Classic. It's a really cool idea. Yes, Mike, exactly that. It's AEW's version of the G1. Brian Danielson couldn't go do the G1, so Tony Khan brought the damn thing to him.
Right?
Like,
the C1.
It's super cool to see on paper, But then they pull stuff like this, and like then you wonder, are we getting another championship? Is this going to be just kind of a championship that pops up when the tournament happens? Like, what is exactly going on when it comes to that as well? So
to me, it just seems that this whole Continental Classic is just shoehorned in because, you know, they have time to do something and they wanted to do something for the last pay-per-view of the year to get that buy rate so close to New Year's, right between Christmas and New Year's, right? That's honestly what, to me, what this feels like. Does this phone in Eddie Kingston going to the finals? Does this null and void ROH final battle? There's like, it's just so confusing sometimes.
Basically say Eddie Kingston's winning the whole thing, essentially. Like,
right?
I don't know. We'll take that on a wait and see approach.
Yep.
Moving on.
All right, let us move on.
Yeah, 4-way tag team championship ladder match. This was bonkers. Big Bill and Ricky Starks defend against FTR, Alphi, and the Kings of the Black Throne representing the House of Black. Wow.
It's crazy to think that we had this match and the Texas Death Match all in one card, because this match was crazy. The one thing that I'm starting to get very afraid of is the amount of moves that they're doing on bridged ladders. That Gonzo Bomb on the ladder scared me.
And then the ladder falling on Brody's ankle, like right out, like, oh my God, man. There's so many things that were happening in this match where I was just like cringing, because I'm like, that's not just like a normal bump, man. That's gonna take some time off your career there. Like,
yep,
these guys put it all out there tonight, and it was a insane match.
Everyone looked great. Everyone looked absolutely fantastic, and that was the important part of this match. And that always worries me with these multi-people match, especially a ladder match. My one critique, and there's literally nothing you can do about this, is just the production, right? The camera cuts, because they're trying to show us everything, and there's so much going on. This is maybe why WWE likes to have people kind of chilling in the corner and focusing on just the ring, right? There was so much going on that there were so many camera cuts, and I just feel sorry for the director, the producers, because putting this match together was just crazy. Again, very minor thing, but outside of that, it was crazy. It was absolutely crazy. And Matt, we say this every single time about ladder matches, our ladder matches being overdone, because like you think, have we done everything possible, every bump possible in a ladder match? They just, you know, throw out new ones with this Gonzo Bomb, with even when Malakai Black used the ropes to swing the ladder backwards.
Yeah, I know. There was some really cool stuff that happened in this match. And like even another cool moment, not even involving weapons all that much, was the confrontation between the big men in the match.
Yeah.
Like seeing those guys go at it, Brody King and Big Bill, like, whew. And listening to the crowd get behind Brody King too. I think that's been really cool to see the crowd really embrace the House of Black, really get behind their guys. It's very cool to see the tag team division as heated up as it is right now as well. I think that was something that was kind of lacking for quite some time. We had two really prominent tag team matches on this show for the AEW tag team division, and that's a combination of six teams. I can't do math, apparently, throughout this entire show. So it's really cool to see the tag team division heating up as much as it is. And it's good to see, again, the crowd getting behind their guys and showing support as much as they do.
And the end, look, it was a great match, but the end kind of came out of nowhere, right? Starks and Wheeler are climbing the ladder. Starks just grabs one of the belts and hits Wheeler over the head with it. And grabs the belt.
Cool ending. It almost seemed like one of those things where like they were short for time and maybe just had to wrap it up as soon as possible.
That's honestly what it felt like. It just felt like they were rushing on that ending, which is fine. Nothing wrong with that. Ricky Starks and Big Bill are still your tag team champs.
Is this something that surprised you before we move on to the next match that we've seen the champions retain?
No. I really think that they're trying to do something with Ricky Starks and Big Bill long term So they're going to keep these belts for a little longer. I don't know what the plan exactly is. I just want to see Ricky Starks get that run he deserves. It's cool seeing him in this tag team. It's cool that he's a champion. And I feel like that's the main reason why they retained, is that they don't have a singles story ready for him. That's kind of where I'm at with this.
No, I agree. Yeah, Mike Baker, that was my favorite ladder spot with the sink shot that Black did. It was such a great way to show that even in the middle of violence, Black is always thinking in the ring. Loved it. Yep.
And I love the fact that the commentators picked up on that, right? And they flat out said, like, the ring is a weapon, right? So it's very cool. And these are the dynamics I love to see in wrestling, where the in-ring matches the commentary, matches everything else. And it was just, yeah, it's the beauty of it.
Magic, man. And I will say, when they switched the stipulation to a ladder match, I was definitely questioning whether the champions were going to walk out. But I think there's longevity in that team, like you mentioned. I think there's something long-term there. So I think run with it while you can.
Yep.
But moving on to AEW TBS Championship. A lot of acronyms. Chris Statlander, Julia Hart, Sky Blue. What were your thoughts on this match?
My initial thought, this is the most Boris comment ever, but just roll with it, was I have realized one thing, is that I love a good trashy blonde. Thank you, Kesha, for starting this weird, weird kink with me. Number two, the second thing I realized was that there are too many witchy evil women in wrestling right now. They need to kind of pull that character trait back a little bit with Julia Hart. Sky Blue isn't, I wouldn't say she's witchy per se, but I'm digging the metal that she's doing. This match was exactly, here's what I texted someone. I like this match. Whoever put this match together, like, I'm so interested to see who the producer was for this match, because whoever did it did a fantastic job. But I feel like they were just maybe one step too slow to make this match excellent.
Yeah, it definitely seemed like it was starting to get to that next gear, and then the finish happened. And I honestly think the right call was made with this finish. Julia Hart is killing it right now. House of Black is killing it right now. They were all over Collision last night. They've been all over pretty much every AEW brand at this point. So I think pulling the trigger on Julia Hart, I think her being the person to take the championship off Statlander, because let's be real, I don't think anybody had like a particular prediction on who was going to take that championship away from Statlander at the time. So Julia Hart kind of out of nowhere, but I think honestly the right call.
Yeah, I predicted Sky Blue. But I'm very happy that it was Julia Hart. Again, thinking about that year-end ballot, the best and the worst of 2023, Julia Hart might be my vote for most improved in 2023.
I think that's a huge argument that could be easily made.
Yep. All right, we've been talking and teasing about this match so much. Let's just get right into it.
Whew. Hangman Page, Swerve Strickland, Texas Deathmatch. But wow. Like a man drank another man's blood.
Yeah. Glass. They use glass in that match. And Mike, 100% agreed with you. Sky Blue is just hanging in there, considering that not too long ago she looked so out of place, right? But this match,
the biggest thing about Sky Blue for me before we move on from that comment is just not even the in-ring work, because man, she can go in-ring. I honestly think she's, in terms of in-ring work, one of the best in that division. I think it's just the character and the promo work she's got to work on. I seen a clip of her cutting a promo for this triple threat, and it was just kind of, I don't want to say awkward, but
it was awkward.
There wasn't much behind it for me.
I think, and this goes to the characters, the new characters that they're introducing for some of these women. I think that's more them, right? Like, Sky Blue honestly looks like someone to listen to Cannibal Corpse, right? On her way to the arena. So might as well just embrace that. They always say, and you know, we've always said on this show, Jason Agnew used to always say that the best wrestling characters are just, you know, fragments of themselves, parts of themselves, times 10.
Absolutely. Amp that stuff up. And that's exactly what we're seeing, I think, with Julia Hart, even Chris Statlander. I think this guy's going to find her place. It's just going to take time.
Yep.
But yeah, number Hangman one. Page, Swerve Strickland. Holy crap. You mentioned the glass. The amount of barbed wire in this match, like, so much happened in this match to even process. Yeah.
There was so much. Number one, Prince Nana dancing with the Laker girls. You knew this match was going to be special. Like, you knew this match was going to be special just with those entrances. Loved Swerve's Terry Funk expired trunks.
I love the fact that Hangman didn't even take his entrance and just rushed the ring. Small little things. You're in a blood feud. No need for an entrance.
Mm-hmm. Why would you give the guy a chance to know you're coming, right? Especially, like, dude went to this guy's house, right? And I love the fact that they're playing this up, where it's Hangman, the one who is so angry that he is willing to do whatever it takes. And Swerve kind of used that to the advantage in this match, right? Where he kind of let Hangman do stuff, but then he kind of stood back and countered a lot. And this match was so well done. I absolutely love this. Hangman Page, Swerve Strickland, honestly, one of the best feuds of the year, in my opinion. And yeah.
Can you imagine hiring Swerve Strickland?
Well, stranger things have happened. And again, like, right, you know.
It's just like, dude, that guy is absolute money. Money.
Well, there's a reason why Triple H wanted him back when he took him or when he took over, right? Like, you know that he saw something special. And you know that Triple H probably sent him a text message saying, attaboy. Because this match proves what WWE and NXT saw in Swerve Strickland. You know, Matt and I used to always talk on NXT Talk, not this Matt, the other Matt, that Swerve Strickland is so special, and we're seeing it from his promos and out to the in-ring. And having him not in a technical match, in this type of match, and just excelling.
Yep, yep, the versatility of Swerve Strickland. I can agree with that as well, man. There were some points where I was just like, ooh. But Tom Egan, I can agree with you, man.
Yeah.
Mike Baker, yeah, Swerve, like, is the definition of let him cook.
It's so good. So good. Even the moves that they did on the cylinder block, just the staplers, the fact that Hangman Page stapled the children's art onto Swerve was just poetic in so many ways.
Swerve and then just stapling himself, just being like, yeah, I'm good,
exactly,
man.
Exactly. It's like, that didn't hurt me. What else do you got? Right? Like, that's what I loved about this match, was that Swerve, even in the match, he kept intimidating and just telling Paige, you know, come get some. And that's what I absolutely loved about this match. It was so well done. And
one sour note for me, just a tad bit. I don't feel like we need the Brian Cage interference.
Thank you. That's literally where I was going to go, was the match was doing great, was, you know, and then Brian Cage comes in. So, of course, Swerve doesn't get the clean win in this type of match. But you know what I mean. Yeah, the Brian Cage running was kind of eh.
Yeah, like, for the match that was happening in front of us and, like, how historic that match truly felt in the moment, to have that run-in and to have that kind of effect to finish, too, I was kind of like, eh. Don't get me wrong, I truly do feel the right person won. I think Swerve elevating up the card is the right call right now. But, yeah, not necessary whatsoever. It literally, exactly, Mike Baker.
Yep, exactly. That is exactly it. And Mike, honestly, you hit the nail on the head. Swerve is the definition of let him cook. The end, I was dying in the end, because you had this shot at one point of Hangman Page on the ground. and Prince Nana just kind of slowly trying to get up and Swerve wrapping that the chain around Hangman. It was just so well done. I loved it. It was a really well shot ending.
Before Nana taking the bump too, him doing the dance trying to get Hangman into it, popped me hard as well.
Like, Prince Nana. Oh, the best.
What
the best.
Story, man.
I never
Prince
thought.
Nana. What a story.
I never thought I never thought I would see him 20 years later again.
Dude's an absolute legend.
Yep. Such a good match. Such a great match. All right, so let's talk about this. Swerve wins. Right move for you? What do you think?
I 100% think it's the right move. However, the question that we got earlier of how does Hangman recover, and I hadn't even processed that. I mean, he's a former world champion. He's a former tag team champion. I don't think he's necessarily somebody that needs to be up the card. I think he's somebody who could be a fantastic TNT champion if given the opportunity. I think he's somebody who could elevate others like he just did with Swerve because he is a former world champion and very few in that company are world champions. So where Hangman goes from here is a very good question. Honestly, I'm curious to see, especially with the route that his friends went later on in the show, and whether that coincides with one another is something I'm very curious to see. And then Swerve Strickland, man, I think it's time we see him say what he wanted to do. I would not be surprised if he's the man to take the AEW World Championship off of MJF.
I said it on a roundtable a few weeks ago. I truly do believe that it's going to be Swerve Strickland who finally dethrones MJF. I don't know why. Just my gut says that there's something special that they see in Swerve Strickland as well. We clearly see it.
I don't think there was a reason they had him say that he wanted to be the first Black AEW World Champion. You don't just kind of say that stuff on TV without there being a purpose for it, without there being kind of a callback to it, especially with AEW and how good they are with telling stories like that. To call back to that, and after the match that they had tonight and being on that level with Hangman Page and exceeding and excelling, I truly think he could be a world champion of the company and be at that top level.
Yep, exactly. So here's what I think Hangman Page, right? He needs to get for lack of a better term, let's say a rehab win of a program, right? Jay Lethal, Jeff Jarrett. Something simple like that, right? A quick program that leads into their Winter's Coming show. Just something quick. He gets the W, puts him back on the right path, and then we'll see what happens next year.
Yeah, that's fair. I'm intrigued again to see if his path crosses with his friends, but we'll move it on from here.
Yeah, exactly. And like I said, I felt sorry for anyone who went after this match.
And speaking of his friends, the Young Bucks putting up their tag team championship opportunity against the Golden Jets, being a team, the team of Kenny Omega and Chris Jericho. Yeah, you talk about being in an awkward spot on the card, man, after that match that we just saw with Swerve and Hangman having to be in this position. As good as the Bucks are, as good as Jericho is, as good as Omega is, man, this was a really rough spot to be in. And not to say that they had a bad match whatsoever, just after what we just saw, it was hard to focus, man.
It was, and the crowd was out of it. The crowd was absolutely out of it until much later in the match. That last, 10%? Not even a third. Not even the last third. It was the last, little bit where the crowd kind of came alive again, because the match overall was good. It wasn't great. It was good. But, you know, it was one, like I always say the joke, I needed to have a smoke after that previous match. And I think half of LA did as well.
I seen workers, I seen fans, I seen like many people literally tweet that exact phrase. I need to go have a smoke and I don't even freaking smoke. Like that match took a lot out of so many people. I only imagine being there live in the atmosphere, like legitimately would need a breather after that.
Yep, exactly. And honestly, who better than the Young Bucks, Kenny Omega and Chris Jericho, to try to do something. Like, I'm glad, and like I said this at the top, I'm glad they didn't just throw in one of the women's matches here, right? They put in an act that wouldn't phase them for the lack of crowd involvement.
Yeah, absolutely. It doesn't take away from the story that they're trying to tell, and it doesn't disrespect the women's division like they sometimes like to do, putting them in that position. I was, again, like, the structure of this card, that's one thing I was very impressed with. And like you mentioned, putting these guys in this position, I don't think was a bad call at all, with how intense the rest of the show really was with what was going on. I think this was the right call for this particular spot, and it delivered for what it was. Like, it was a super fun match. And again, I think the right call with the finish. I don't think you achieved the longevity, going back to that word, the longevity of having the Golden Jets together with Omega and Jericho. I think you can get a lot more out of that, and breaking that up this soon, I don't think was the right call. And let's be honest, like, I don't really think we need to see the Young Bucks in the AEW Tag Team Championship picture at the moment. Do people want to see the whole Elite Saga storyline again? Not necessarily, but I also don't want to see them really be champions again for a little while.
Same.
Let teams like Ricky Starks and Big Bill take the ball and run with it.
Question for you, Matt. How do you feel about this possible heel turn for the Young Bucks? Like, they're turning heel and face more than the Big Show at this point.
Yeah, that one's a little strange, and that's where I kind of like the Hangman Page stuff. Does that coincide with what's going on with the Bucks? Because Bucks are turning because Omega, and like, Omega wasn't there for Hangman either, and like, Hangman, the whole like elite relationship over the last, honestly, since essentially Cody left, it's been kind of rocky in terms of how it's been presented on TV. So,
life imitating art.
It may be.
That's a joke.
I'm genuinely intrigued to see if those two coincide, or see what I did there. Coincide. Missed myself.
You know, it's 1 a.m. when. Yeah, we saw Poison Rana's. We saw Matt Jackson doing the one winged angel. Pretty good match. We saw a few V triggers. We saw Kenny Omega even teasing the heel turn.
We saw a hard temper tantrum.
And then we saw the temper tantrum, which is exactly. Did you call it the hard temper tantrum? Because that's literally what I said to someone.
Honestly, man, like, my goodness.
Yep. It was something. It was a little too much. A little too much for my liking. It reminded me of Christian when he used to throw that temper tantrum, like that gimmick back in, like, what, 2002?
Again, I'm waiting to see the payoff. I'm on a wait-and-see approach on this one, because I wasn't the biggest fan of what they're doing with the whole Elite stuff right now. But if it ends up giving us a good story, then I'm intrigued to see it.
Yep, exactly. Mike, yep. The Don Callis stuff is very interesting because it's kind of spanning a few stories. So we'll see exactly where they go with the whole Don Callis family.
The
Does
only
he just
thing
straight
I don't
up?
Like about the Don Callis family is just the expansion. If it becomes too much, and if it becomes, you know, the relation I'm going to go with the NWO. Nobody wants to see too many members.
Or he just says "F you" to his current family and takes over the Elite without Kenny.
Interesting.
Right? So many possibilities, and that's the beauty of this stuff. All right, let us jump to the main event. And just remember, patrons, you can start calling in right now if you want to. I know that
we forgot something.
What did we forget?
And that was the announcement of the signing of one Mr. Aerial Assassin, Will Ospreay.
Yes. Not a huge surprise, I should say.
It was really weird to announce it, considering he's going to be still sticking in New Japan for a few months. That was like, He kind of took the wind out of the sails when he was like, wait, I got to tell you guys something. I got to finish up my dates. Don't get mad. But like, why not just wait a few months and announce it then? It was one of those things where I was kind of confused. And in a week where you announce like Kota Ibushi signing and you do all these
Ronda Rousey showing
cool
up
announcements, it's really weird that a guy you could have waited on a couple months is the guy that you choose to announce that you're signing.
You honestly want to know what my theory on that is?
That.
Spite. I honestly think Tony Khan did it out of spite to WWE, saying, we got him, bitches.
Yeah, that honestly sounds like a very TK move, unfortunately.
Right? Like this new Tony Khan that we're seeing, right? Like this is so Tony Khan at this point.
That's kind of him just swinging his thing.
Yeah, yeah. Doing a helicopter, some would say.
Fair enough. As we move on to the main event of the evening, we thought it was going to be Adam Cole versus Jay White. Adam Cole hobbling out on crutches, barely able to walk on the damn crutches, let alone compete in a main event match. Switchblade coming out just casually, thinking he's going to have a walk in the park for the match. And all of a sudden, Scott Steiner runs. Oh, wait, no, it's just MJF coming out of an ambulance.
Okay. So, Matt Etter, I got to give credit to Matt Etter. I thought the same, but he texted me this, and the dynamics of this was hilarious. So, you have Adam Cole clearly not cleared to wrestle, right? Clearly still injured, hobbling, on crutches. They let him not only take the match, but come down to the ring. But MJF comes out of the ambulance, you know, a little injured, and you have half of the office telling him he can't go down to the ring.
Yeah. Yeah, again, you went back, going back to what you said earlier, the attitude era. Very, very attitude era, Feely.
Yeah, this is, honestly, it was like the greatest hits of the attitude era with that through story from the beginning with the guns injuring MJF to MJF being loaded onto the ambulance to MJF stealing a ambulance to drive himself back to the arena to just everything. Everything was just so attitude era. And I don't even mean that in a bad way. I really don't. It just honestly did remind me of watching Raw back in 97,
8, 9. It's the stuff like the Stone Cold driving a beer truck into the building and spraying everybody with it. It's that type of stuff, man.
Yeah. What did you think of the actual match?
Honestly, they got a lot out of that match, considering the condition that MJF came out in. I was expecting Jay White to win the championship when they started the angle that they started tonight. I was not expecting MJF to walk out with the championship. The only reason I did expect him to walk out with the championship is it's very evident that the pay-per-view that is going down next month is a couple days away from the expiration date of MJF's contract, and it's happening pretty much in his hometown. So it's kind of a given he's going to be still champion, I would think.
You would think.
And that was the only thing that kept me really believing that he was going to win this match. And the more the match went on, that was the case.
So quickly, MJF uses he does the power of the punch on Jay White to get the win. But Matt, I have to ask you this. Does this hurt Jay White in any shape, way, or form?
I don't think it does. Just because of all the shenanigans that ended up going in. He also did take the power of the punch, the Dynamite Diamond Ring as well. I truly think he's fine. Yep. I think he's a future world champion. I think Jay White is Bullet Club Gold is completely fine.
And you know, I had to bring it up because you know, there's so many people. Bullet Club Gold got buried tonight. So I had to ask you.
Absolutely not. Absolutely. In fact, they can use that to their advantage, I think. Even Adam Cole's involvement, very, very clear. They're good.
Yeah, that's the thing, right? Now Bullet Club Gold can become a little more fierce. This is what I would do on Wednesday. Whoever the opening match is, have them come out and decimate everyone. Jay White takes the mic saying, it's not over. It was BS how I lost, right?
I mean, Juice Robinson got a friggin' TV thrown at his head. So, like, they better be coming for revenge.
Mm-hmm. So that's what I mean. I think this actually positions them in a way where they could be stronger in a couple weeks as opposed to hurt. So again, the reason why I bring it up is because a lot of fans equate a loss to being buried or losing steam or something, right? This is why it's so important to just let things play out.
Absolutely. So. And now that we've crossed midnight and MJF is still the world champion, he has hit 365 days, a full year, as the AEW world champion, the first champion in history to do so.
Yeah. Good on him, man. I would have never thought that he'd be this type of champ. We've seen so many different sides of MJF over the past year. His in-ring has improved so much. Not to say that he was ever a bad in-ring, but it just improved so much. He's taking some risks you never think he would take. That cutter out of the ring. Dude, I thought his feet clipped the top rope for a second.
I mean, even that elbow drop when the table broke and he just decided to go for it anyways. Like, that was ballsy as hell.
Yep. Like, if you've ever seen anyone wrestle for a contract, it's MJF right now.
Absolutely. He is showing up and showing out every single time he's out there. And Mike Baker, I don't think people should be losing their minds about Jay. Jay White is going to be completely fine. I genuinely think he is the future of pro wrestling. He, Swerve Strickland, a lot of these guys that are stepping up into these roles, are going to be the guys that are going to be the world champions and the standard bearers for the next generation of talent. I genuinely believe that these guys are going to be the ones we look at, like the John Cena's, like the Randy Orton's, like the Batista's of this generation, where like it's really, really insane to see the amount of talent that's on those guys as early on in their careers as they are.
And it's crazy to think that the reason speculation, the reason why we're not seeing Jay White in WWE is because of a hiring freeze after the acquisition. To me, that's the most ludicrous thing. Like, you would think that, yeah, make the exception for that guy. But you know what? WWE's loss is AEW's gain. And, you know, here we are, right? Like, I would have never thought that, what, 6 months later, Jay White's in this position. Because AEW has this weird thing of someone new comes in, the new shiny toys here. They're cool for a couple months, then they fade out. Jay White kind of took him a while to get started, but basically since Collision started, he has been the focal point of Collision and of AEW programming.
Absolutely. Collision was the best thing to happen for Jay White and the rest of that faction. Bullet Club Gold has thrived because of that show, and thankfully so.
Yeah, exactly. That's exactly it. All right, Matt. So that was the show. Like, again, I enjoyed it. I enjoyed it quite a bit. It was a very fun show. I really did like it.
In terms of, like, the storyline, I will still say thumbs in the middle for me. There were some things that I'm going to wait and see and watch how they develop. But overall, in terms of the match quality, I would say a thumbs up tonight, genuinely. Match quality, it was a thumbs up. Storyline progression, thumbs in the middle.
Yeah, I think I would agree with you overall. I'm just thinking through. There was no match where I'm like, oh, that was garbage. Closest thing, that the only match that I really didn't like too much was the sub-main event with the Golden Jets versus the Bucks, but I think that was just absolute. Just, I was still thinking about Swerve and Hangman Page.
It's one of those things where you're going to have to go back and rewatch it, and you're going to realize, like, it's really not that bad of a match. It's just the placement of where it was.
And also, oh man, Rogers customers throughout Canada. Oh, I feel, I was able to find the show eventually, but if you're a Rogers customer, you missed probably the first two matches. I think it started right when Tony Storm and Hikaru Shida started. But you paid the $50 and you were watching the Chicago Bulls game randomly on the pay-per-view feed. So hopefully people get something out of that. But that really sucks because it was like, yeah, it sucks. Modern
I'd
day.
Be so mad if I bought the pay-per-view and then ended up seeing a Bulls game when Adam Copeland was wrestling.
Right? That's the thing, right? Like, yeah, the two matches that people missed were the Adam Copeland, Sting, Darby Allin match. And what was the second match? I absolutely forgot what the second match was.
Off the top of my head, I can't think about it. But it was the Orange Cassidy and John Moxley match.
That's it. That's it. Yep, that's exactly it. Yeah. All right, patrons. So this is your time. We're gonna stay up a little longer. If you want to join in, let us know your feedback. Let me go into the thread. I did put that thread up. Let's actually use it. Let's get some of that feedback going. All right.
Yeah, let's do it.
So again, patrons, let me know if you want to go up, or anyone watching, let me know. I'll send you a link so that you can join in on the fun. All right, so from the Facebook group, which you can join at facebook.com/SNMEradio, put up a thread. Andre from Edmonton, he says, this was one of those shows that felt really long. I watched with a group, and during the Texas Deathmatch, most people went to smoke, and I played on my Switch. It was so over the top, way too much blood. Tony Storm winning the title and Ospreay signing were my highlights of the night.
All right, fair enough. And that's going to be one of the things, is kind of seeing the backlash that comes out of the match, because you're going to have some people that really like it, and you're going to have some people that really don't. And that's, again, just kind of the cups of tea for certain people.
And I think, but this is the thing that where, you know, it's AEW style, a little something something for everyone. You want some technical wrestling, you'll get it. You want the blood, you'll get it. You want the comedy, you'll get it, right? Like, it's kind of the up and down, the good and the bad of AEW all at once.
Yeah, absolutely. That's kind of always the way AEW has been.
Yep. All right. Also, Jake Olinar, Jake from Chicago, he says, Full Gear was a good but not great pay-per-view. Main event was just not for me, but enjoyed Tony and Julia winning their titles. And Swerve Hangman was all out slobber knocker. 7 out of 10.
I'm pretty much agreeing with like what I'm seeing across the thread here, is like the women winning the championships tonight and Swerve winning his match. Like, those were definitely the highlights of the show for me as well.
Yep. I hate saying last names because I butcher so many people's last names. So I do apologize. Danny Vatnerick, highlights of the show for me were the two women's matches. Tony Storm and Julia Hart are well-deserving as their respective champions, and could help bring much-needed life to the AEW fledgling women's division. The Texas Deathmatch was way too much for me, as I hate that backyard garbage deathmatch stuff, and that one blood spot was stupid and uncalled for. Plus, the wrong guy won, and any rematch they have is a step down, because this should have been the blow-off match. The main event was also way too overbooked, and the handling of it through the whole show reminded me of bad 2000 WCW booking. I give the show a 5 out of 10. Interesting. Yeah, no. I don't think people remember how bad WCW was in 2000.
That's accurate, man. That's accurate. And even some of the Attitude Era stuff wasn't so great.
Exactly. Like, I love when people start reminiscing about the Attitude Era, saying that that was the best. No, it wasn't. Go back and watch some of that, those matches. You know, the minute and a half match on Raw and stuff like that.
You want to see Mae Young in the hand? Go ahead, guys.
Dear God. Oh, now I know what I'm gonna be thinking of after I take this. Anyways. Yeah, so that's some of the feedback that we got. It's late. It's 1:30 a.m. I'm ready to watch some F1 from Las Vegas. The race might even be over now, because every car may have blown up. Who knows? But yeah, just remember, we have so much going on here on Sunday Night's Main Event. We have a show each and every single day that covers the world of professional wrestling, from reviews and opinions to just general chatter. Every Sunday we have the double slobber knocker of wrestling, as we have the iHeartRadio and TSN show happening, which is hosted by me. And then we also have Live Audio Wrestling The Law. It is back with Chris and Brady. I love having those two shows. It's like, it gives you the full world of combat sport. Matt, I love you for doing that. I was waiting for you to do that all show. I love the fact that you did that. So SNMEradio.com. Go to your favorite podcast catcher and search for Sunday Night's Main Event. hit that subscribe, leave a review, and we have so many great stuff coming at you. Chris Van Vliet's going to be on the show next week. Again, we're going to be talking all things Survivor Series, and I think we're going to be having an interview next week. I hope it happens. I'll give people some more information after that. And like I said, on the main show, the TSN radio show next Sunday, we're going to be talking best and worst shows. Oh, I'm so excited for those because those are sometimes people's favorite show. And we are going to be doing the worst. We always have fun with that. It's going to be comedy. Comedy gold. Trust me. It's not an hour where we try to shit on people too much. But yeah, man. You know?
It was a fun time. It was a super fun time. I am one half of your HWE Tag Team Champions, as you can see. And you can follow me on all forms of social media, Matthew Grant, First Days of Four. Keep up with what I'm doing in the world of independent professional wrestling, whether it's here in Ontario, whether it's over the border in the States. I'm trying to take over the independent scene one promotion at a time, and I hope you join me on that journey. Check out Collision Catch Up every single Sunday morning, unless it's apparently on a pay-per-view Saturday where it releases on Saturday morning. But every single Sunday morning, as long as we can, as long as SME Radio will host us, because goddamn, it is a pleasure to be a part of this network. Check out every single show on the network. Show them some love. It is a absolute honor to see what SME Radio, having the Law back in the mix as well. Like, it's a fun time to be a part of this family. So join the family, hop on the ride, and get on this roller coaster.
Exactly. It's a roller coaster, all right. And you know what? Sometimes we live rent-free in people's minds, and that's all right as well. It happens. Thank you so much for joining us here on the AEW Full Gear After Party. Just remember, just go to Sunday Night's Main Event, snmeradio.com, favorite podcast catcher, search for Sunday Night's Main Event, and that is exactly what we have it. Andre, thank you guys so much for listening, watching, whatever. Till next time, stay tranquilo.